After dropping my car off, we go to the mall. Harden whines and complains like a child the entire time, and I literally have to coerce him with sexual bribes to get him to buy a tie. He ends up getting black dress pants, a black jacket, a white dress shirt, and a black tie. Simple, but perfect for him. He refuses to try everything on, so I hope it all actually fits him. He would take any excuse not to go to the wedding, but I am not going to let that happen. Once we get him settled, it's my turn.
"The white one,"
he says, and gestures to the short white dress in my hand, the other option being a longer black one. Since Karen mentioned that the color scheme was black and white, I figured I would stick to it. Harden seemed to really like the white dress I wore yesterday, so I decide to listen to him. Much to my annoyance, before I realize what he's doing, Harden goes from just carrying my dress and shoes to paying for them. When I protest, the young girl at the register smiles and shrugs as if to say, "What do you expect me to do?"
"I have to do some work tonight, so I won't be home for dinner,"
he tells me as we walk out of the mall. "Oh, I thought you worked from home."
"I do, but I need to go to the library for a little bit,"
he explains.
"I won't be gone too late."
"I'll just go grocery shopping while you're gone," I tell him, and he nods.
"Be careful and go before it gets dark,"
he says. He makes me a list of things he likes and leaves as soon as we get back to the apartment. I change into jeans and a sweatshirt and walk to the grocery store down the street. When I get back home, I put everything away, catch up on some homework, and make myself something to eat. I text Harden but don't hear anything back, so I put a plate of food in the microwave for him to heat up when he gets home and lie on the couch to watch television. Chapter 89. When I wake up, it takes me a few moments to realize I'm still on the couch. "Harden?" I call out, untangling myself from the blanket. I walk to the bedroom in the hopes he will be in there, but the room is empty. Where the hell is he? I go back to the living room and snatch my phone off the back of the couch. Still no messages from him, and it's 7 in the morning. I call but get his voicemail and hang up. I storm around the kitchen and turn on the coffee pot before heading to the bathroom to take a shower. I'm lucky I woke up on time because I didn't actually set my alarm. I never forget to set an alarm. "Where are you?" I say aloud and step into the shower. As I blow dry my hair, I go over the possible explanations for his absence. Last night, I thought he just got caught up with his work, since he has a lot to make up for, or maybe he ran into someone he knew and the time slipped away from him. But at the library? Those things close fairly early, and even bars close eventually. The most likely explanation is that he went to a party. I somehow know this is what happened. A small part of me still worries that maybe he was in an accident. The thought alone hurts too bad to even entertain. But no matter what excuse or story I conjure up in my mind, I know he is doing something he isn't supposed to. Everything was good between us last night, and then he goes and stays out all night? In no mood to wear a dress, I put on one of my old black pencil skirts and a soft pink button-up shirt. Clouds cover the sky my entire drive, and by the time I get to Vance, my mood has darkened to match them, and I'm infuriated. Who the hell does he think he is to stay out all night without even telling me? Kimberly raises a brow at me when I walk past the donut table without grabbing one, but I give her my best fake smile and walk to my office. My morning passes in a daze. I read and reread the same pages over and over without comprehending any of the words. There is a knock on my door and my heart stops. I desperately hope it's Harden, regardless of how pissed I am at him. Instead, it's Kimberly. "Do you want to go get lunch with me?" she asks sweetly. I almost decline her offer, but sitting here obsessing over my boyfriend's whereabouts is not helping me one bit. I smile. "Sure." We walk around the corner to a small cantina-style Mexican restaurant. By the time we get inside, we're both shivering, and she asks to be seated close to a heater. The small table we are given is directly underneath a heater, and we both raise our hands in the air to warm up. "This weather is unforgiving," she says, and prattles on about being cold and already missing summer. "I almost forgot how cold the winter is," I tell her plainly. "The seasons have blended together, and I barely noticed fall slipping away."
"So, how are things with Mr. Badass?" she asks with a laugh.
The server brings us chips and salsa, and my stomach growls. I am not skipping my morning donut anymore. "Well,
I debate whether to share my personal life with her. I don't have many friends. None, really, excluding Steph, whom I never see anymore. Kimberly is at least 10 years older than me, and maybe she has some good insight into the minds of men, something I certainly lack in. I stare at the ceiling covered in strings of beer-bottle-shaped lights and take a deep breath. Well, I am actually not sure how things are at the moment. Yesterday things were fine, but then he stayed out last night. All night. It was our second night in the apartment and he just never came home, I explain.
Wait, back up. Okay, so you two live together?
She gapes. Yeah, as of Tuesday. I try to smile.
Okay, so then he just didn't come home last night?
Nope. He said he had to do some work and go by the library, but then he didn't come home.
And you don't think he's hurt or anything, right?
No, I really don't. I feel as if I would somehow know if he wasn't okay, like we are tied together in some way that would immediately let me know if he was hurt.
He hasn't called?
Nope. Or texted, I frown.
I would have his balls if I were you. This is unacceptable, she proclaims.
The server stops by to say, "Your food will be out shortly," and fills up my water. I'm a little thankful for the small interruption to give me a chance to catch my breath after Kimberly's harsh words. And then she goes on, and when I realize she's not judging me but sticking up for me, I feel better.
I mean it. You have to make it clear that he can't behave this way. Otherwise, he will keep doing it. The problem with men is that they are creatures of habit, and if you let this be his habit, you'll never be able to break it. He needs to know from the start that you won't put up with this shit. He is lucky to have you, and he needs to get his shit together.
Something about her pep talk gives me more confidence in my anger. I should be pissed. I should have his balls, as Kimberly so subtly put it. How do I do that? I ask, and she laughs.
Let him have it.
Unless he has a damned good excuse, which I am sure he is plotting right now, you let him have it the second he walks through that door.
You deserve to be respected, and if he isn't respecting you, then you need to either make him or kick him to the curb.
You make it sound so easy, I laugh.
Oh, it's far from easy, she laughs, then grows serious. But it has to be done.
The rest of our lunch is filled with stories of her college life and how she has had her fair share of terrible relationships. Her blonde bob sways back and forth as she shakes her head during almost every story. I find myself laughing so hard I have to dab the corners of my eyes. The food is delicious, and I am glad I came out to lunch with her instead of sulking alone in my office. On the way back to my office, Trevor spots me from near the restrooms and comes over, smiling.
Hello, Tessa.
Hey, how are you? I ask politely.
I'm okay. It's awfully cold out there, he says, and I nod.
You look lovely today, he adds, and looks away.
I get the feeling he didn't mean to say that aloud. I smile and thank him before he heads into the bathroom, obviously embarrassed. By the time I leave, I have gotten literally no work done, so I take the manuscript home with me in hopes of making up for my lack of motivation today. When I arrive back at the apartment, Hardin's car still isn't in the lot. My anger returns, and I call him and cuss him out on his voicemail, which surprisingly makes me feel a little better. I make myself a quick dinner and get my things ready for tomorrow. I can't believe it's only 2 days until the wedding. What if he doesn't come back before then? He will. Won't he? I look around the apartment. As charming as it seems to have lost some of its glow in Hardin's absence. Somehow, I manage to get a good amount of work done, and I'm just putting everything away when the door opens. Hardin stumbles through the living room and into the bedroom without saying a word. I hear him toss his boots onto the floor and curse at himself, most likely for falling over. I go over what Kimberly said at lunch today and gather all my thoughts, pushing my anger to its head.
"Where the hell were you?" I yell as I enter the room.
Hardin has his shirt off and is removing his pants.
"Good to see you, too," he slurs.
"Are you drunk?" I gape.
"Maybe,"
he answers, and tosses his pants onto the floor. I huff and pick them up, throwing them at him. "We have a hamper for a reason," I glare, and he laughs. He is laughing. Laughing at me.
"You have some nerve, Hardin. You stay out all night and most of the day today without even calling me, and then you stumble in here drunk and make fun of me?" I scream.
"Stop yelling. I have a killer headache,"
he groans, and lies on the bed. Do you think this is funny? Is this some sort of game to you? If you aren't going to take our relationship seriously, then why did you ask me to move in with you?
I don't want to talk about this right now. You're overreacting. Now come over here and let me make you happy.
His eyes are bloodshot from the amount of alcohol he consumed. He holds his arms out for me with a stupid, drunken grin on his perfect face. No, Harden, I say sternly. I'm serious. You can't just stay out all night and not even offer me an explanation.
Jesus, would you chill the fuck out? You're not my mother. Stop fighting with me and come here,
he repeats. Get out, I snap.
Excuse me?
He sits up. Now I have his attention. You heard me. Get out. I will not be that girl who sits at home all night waiting on her boyfriend to come home. I expected you to at least come up with a good excuse, but you haven't even tried. I'm not going to give in this time, Harden. I always forgive you way too easily. Not this time. So either explain yourself or get the hell out. I cross my arms, proud of myself for not giving in to him.
In case you forgot, I am the one paying the bills here, so if anyone is going to leave, it will be you,
he says with a blank stare. I glance down at his hands on his knees. His knuckles are yet again busted and covered in dried blood. My mind is still trying to come up with a response when I ask, Did you get in a fight again?
Does it matter?
Yes, Harden, it does matter. Is that what you were doing all night? Fighting people? You didn't even have to work, did you? Or is that your job, beating up people?
What? No, that's not my job. You know what my job is. I did work, then I got distracted,
he says, and swipes his hand over his face. By?
Nothing. Jesus,
he groans.
You were always on my case.
I'm always on your case? What did you expect to happen when you stumbled in here after being gone all night and day? I need answers, Harden. I am sick of you not giving me them. He ignores me and pulls a shirt over his head. I was worried all day. You could have at least called me. I was a mess today while you were out drinking and doing God knows what. You are messing with my internship, and that is not okay.
Your internship? You mean the one that my father got you?
He says with his foul mouth. You're unbelievable.
Just saying.
He shrugs. How is this the same person who just 2 nights ago was whispering how much he loves me into my ear while he thought I was asleep? I'm not even going to respond to that, because I know that's what you want. You want a fight, and I won't give you one. I grab one of my t-shirts and stalk out of the room. Before I exit, I turn back to him. But let me make this clear. If you don't get your shit together, like now, I'm gone. I head to the couch and lie down, grateful for another space to be where he isn't. I allow a few tears to fall before wiping my face and picking up Harden's old copy of Wuthering Heights. No matter how bad I want to go back in there and make him explain everything to me, where he was, who he was with, and why he got into a fight and with whom, I force myself to stay on the couch because that will bother him more. Though probably not half as much as the level of control he has over parts of my life is bothering me. Chapter 90. I put down my book and check the time on my phone. It's a little after midnight, so I should try to force myself to go to sleep. He already tried to get me to come to bed earlier, saying he couldn't sleep without me, but I stuck to my guns and ignored him until he left. I'm just about to drift into sleep when I hear Harden scream,
No!
I jump off the couch without thinking and rush to our bedroom. He is thrashing in the thick blanket and covered in sweat. Harden, wake up, I say gently, and shake his shoulder, moving a soaked curl from his forehead with my other hand. His eyes snap open. They are full of terror. It's okay. Shh. It was just a nightmare. I do my best to soothe him. My fingers play in his hair and then brush over his cheek. He is shaking as I climb into bed behind him and wrap my arms around his waist. I feel him relax as I press my face against his clammy skin.
Please, stay with me,
he begs. I sigh and stay quiet, tightening my grip around him.
Thank you,
he whispers, and within minutes he is asleep again. The water doesn't seem to get hot enough to relax my tense muscles, no matter how high I turn it up. I am exhausted from the lack of sleep last night, and the frustration that comes from dealing with Harden. He was asleep when I got into the shower, and I pray he stays that way until I leave for my internship. Unfortunately, my prayers go unanswered, and he is standing by the kitchen counter when I get out of the bathroom.
"You look beautiful today,"
he says calmly. I roll my eyes and walk past him to grab a cup of coffee before I leave.
"So you aren't speaking to me then?"
"Not right now, no. I have to go to work and I don't have the energy to do this with you," I snap.
"But you came to bed with me,"
he pouts. "Yeah, only because you were screaming and shaking. That doesn't mean you are forgiven. I need an explanation for everything. All the secrets, all the fights, even the nightmares, or I'm done," I surprise him and myself by saying. He groans and runs his hands through his hair.
"Tessa, it's not that simple."
"Yeah, it is, actually. I trusted you enough to give up my relationship with my mother and move in with you so soon. You should trust me enough to tell me what is going on."
"You won't understand. I know you won't,"
he says. "Try me."
I can't,"
he stutters. "Then I can't be with you. I'm sorry, but I have given you a lot of chances, and you keep..." I begin.
"Don't say that. Don't you dare try and leave me."
His tone is angry, but his eyes are hurt. "Then give me some answers. What is it that you think I wouldn't understand? About your nightmares?" I ask.
"Tell me you aren't going to leave me,"
he pleads. Standing my ground with Harden is proving to be much harder than I imagined, especially when he looks so broken. "I have to go. I am already running late," I tell him, and go to the bedroom to get dressed as quickly as I can. Part of me is happy that he doesn't follow me, but part of me wishes he would. He is still standing in the kitchen, shirtless, and gripping his coffee mug with white and busted knuckles when I leave. I mull over everything Harden said this morning. What could I possibly not understand? I would never judge him for something that causes him to have nightmares. I hope that is what he was talking about, but I can't ignore the feeling that I am missing something very obvious here. I feel guilty and tense almost all day, but Kimberly emails me the links to one too many funny YouTube videos for my sour mood to last. By lunch, I almost forget the problem at home.
"I'm sorry for everything. Please come home after work,"
Harden texts, while Kimberly and I eat from a muffin basket someone sent Mr. Vance. "Is that him?" she asks. "Yeah," I tell her. I stood up to him, but I feel terrible for some reason. "I know I am right, but you should have seen him this morning."
"Good.
Hopefully he learns his lesson."
"Did he tell you where he was?" she asks.
"Nope. That's the problem. I groan and eat another muffin."
"Please answer me, Tessa. I love you,"
he sends minutes later. "Just answer the poor guy," Kimberly smiles, and I nod. "I will be home," I respond. Why is it so hard for me to hold my ground with him? Mr. Vance lets everyone go a little after 3, so I decide to stop by a salon and get my hair trimmed and a manicure for the wedding tomorrow. I hope Harden and I can work this out before the wedding, because the last thing I want to do is take an already angry Harden to his father's wedding. By the time I get home, it's almost 6 o'clock, and I have multiple texts from Harden, which I have ignored. When I get to our door, I take a deep breath to mentally prepare for what is to come. Either we will end up screaming at each other, which will lead to one of us leaving, or we will actually talk through it and work it out. Harden is pacing back and forth across the cement floor when I enter. His eyes shoot up to my figure in the doorway, and he looks relieved.
"I thought you weren't coming,"
he says and steps toward me. "Where else would I go?" I say in response, and walk past him into the bedroom.
I made dinner for you,"
he says. He is totally unrecognizable right now. His hair is down across his forehead instead of pushed up and back like it normally is. He is wearing a gray hooded sweatshirt and black sweats, and he seems nervous, worried, and almost afraid. "Oh, why?" I can't help but ask. I change into sweats of my own, and Harden's face falls farther when I don't put on the shirt of his that he has clearly laid on the dresser for me.
"Because I'm an asshole,"
he answers. "Yeah, you are," I say, and walk back into the kitchen.
The meal looks much more appetizing than I thought it would, even though I'm not sure what it is. Some sort of chicken pasta, I think.
It's chicken Florentine.
He answers my thoughts.
You don't have to...
His voice is small. This is such a different scene than usual, and for the first time since I met him, I feel like I have the upper hand. No, it looks good. I'm just surprised, I tell him, and take a bite. It tastes even better than it looks.
Your hair looks nice,
he says. My thoughts travel back to the last time I had a haircut, and Harden was the only one to notice. I need answers, I remind him. He lets out a hard breath.
I know, and I'm going to give them to you.
I take another bite to hide my satisfaction with myself for holding my ground with him.
First, I want you to know that no one, I mean no one except my mother and father, knows this.
He says, and picks at the scabs on his knuckles. I nod and take another bite.
Okay. Well, here goes,
he says nervously before continuing.
One night, when I was around 7, my father was out at the bar across the street from our home. He went there almost every night, and everyone knew him there, which is why it was a terrible idea for him to piss anyone off there. This night, he did just that. He started a fight with some soldiers who were just as plastered as him, and he ended up smashing a beer bottle over one of their heads.
I have no idea where this is going, but I know it won't be pleasant.
Keep eating, please,
he begs. And I nod and try not to stare at him as he continues.
He left the bar, and they came across the road to our house to pay him back for smashing the guy's face, I guess. The problem was that he didn't come home. They just thought he did, and my mom was asleep on the couch waiting up for my dad.
His green eyes meet mine.
Sort of how you were last night.
Harden, I whisper, and grab his hand across the table.
So when they found my mom first...
He trails off and stares at the wall for what feels like forever.
When I heard her screaming, I came downstairs and tried to get them off her. Her nightgown was ripped open and she just kept screaming for me to go. She was trying to keep me from seeing what they were doing to her, but I couldn't just leave, you know?
When he blinks back a tear, my heart breaks for the 7-year-old boy who had to watch those horrendous things happen to his mother. I climb onto his lap on the chair and put my face against his neck.
Long story short, I tried to fight them off, but it didn't do any good. By the time my father stumbled through the door, I had put an entire box of band-aids all over her body to try to, I don't know, fix her or something. How stupid is that?
He asks into my hair. I look up at him and he frowns.
Don't cry,
he whispers, but I can't help it. I never imagined his nightmares were from something so terrible. I'm sorry I made you tell me, I sob.
No. Baby, it's okay. It actually felt good to tell someone,
he assures me.
As good as it can feel.
He pets my hair and winds part of it around his finger, lost in thought.
After that, I would only sleep downstairs on the couch, so if someone came in, they would get to me first. Then the nightmares came, and they just kind of stuck. I went to a few therapists once my father left, but nothing seemed to help, until you.
He gives me a weak smile.
I'm sorry I was out all night. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be him,
he says, and hugs me tighter. Now that I have a few more pieces of the puzzle that is Harden, I can understand him more. And just as suddenly as my mood has shifted about him, my opinion of Ken has changed just as drastically. I know people change, and he obviously has improved himself from the kind of man he used to be, but I can't help the anger bubbling inside me. Harden is the way he is because of his father, because of the drinking, the negligence, and the terrible night that his father provoked an attack against his wife and son and then wasn't there to protect them. I didn't get all the answers I wanted, but I got much more than I ever expected.
I won't do it again, I swear. Just please tell me you won't leave me,
he mutters. Every ounce of anger and entitlement I felt has evaporated. I won't leave you, Harden. I won't leave you. And because he looks at me like he needs to hear it, I say it a few more times.
I love you, Tessa, more than anything,
he says, and wipes my tears. Chapter 91. We haven't moved from our spot in the chair for at least 30 minutes, when finally Hardin lifts his head from my chest and says,
"Can I eat now?"
"Yes." I give him a weak smile and start to climb off his lap, but he pulls me back.
"I didn't say for you to move. Just slide my plate over."
He smiles. I slide his plate over and reach for mine across the small table. I am still reeling from this new information, and now I feel a little uneasy about going to the wedding in the morning. Sensing Hardin doesn't want to discuss his confession further, I take a bite off my plate and say, "You are a much better cook than I expected. Having shown your hand, I expect you'll cook for me more often."
"We will see,"
he says with his mouth full, and we eat the rest of the meal in a comfortable silence. Later, when I'm loading the dishwasher, he walks up behind me and asks,
"Are you still mad?"
"Not exactly," I tell him. "I'm still not happy about you being out all night, and I do want to know who you fought and why." He opens his mouth to speak, but I stop him. "But not tonight. I don't think either of us can handle any more tonight."
"Okay,"
he says softly. Worry flashes in his eyes, but I choose to let it go. "Oh, and I didn't appreciate you throwing my internship in my face, either. That really hurt my feelings."
"I know. That's why I said it,"
he answers, a little too honestly. "I know. That's exactly why I don't like it."
"I'm sorry."
"Don't do it again, okay?" I tell him, and he nods. "I'm exhausted," I groan, in a small attempt to change the subject.
"Me too. Let's lie down for the rest of the evening. I got the cable turned on."
"I was supposed to be doing that," I scowl at him. He rolls his eyes and sits next to me on the bed.
"You can just give me the money for it."
I stare at the wall. "What time are we leaving here tomorrow for the wedding?"
"Whenever we feel like it."
"It starts at 3, so I think we should be there by 2, I say.
"An hour early?"
He whines, and I nod.
"I don't know why you insist,"
he says, but is cut off by my phone ringing. The look on Hardin's face as he leans over and grabs it tells me immediately who it is.
"Why is he calling?"
he huffs. "I don't know, Hardin, but I think I should answer." I grab the phone from his hand. "Noah?" My voice is soft and shaky as Hardin's glower burns a hole through the apartment.
"Hey, Tessa. I'm sorry to call you on a Friday night, but... well..."
He sounds panicked. "What?" I push, since he always takes longer than necessary to explain stressful situations. When I look over to Hardin, he mouths,
"Speaker."
I give him an are-you-kidding look, but end up putting Noah on speaker anyway so Hardin can eavesdrop.
"Your mom got a call from the dorm supervisor about your final bill being paid for the room, so she knows you moved out. I told her I have no idea where you live now, which is the truth, but she refused to believe me, and so she's coming there."
"Coming here? To campus?"
"Yeah, I guess. I don't know, but she said she's going to find you, and she's being irrational and is really pissed off. I just wanted to warn you, you know, that she's coming."
"I can't believe her!" I shout into the phone, but then thank Noah before hanging up. I lie back on the bed. Great. What an excellent way to spend tonight. Hardin leans on one elbow next to me.
"She won't be able to find you. No one knows where we live,"
he assures me and smooths my bangs off my forehead. "She may not find me, but she sure will pester Steph and ask every single person she sees in the dorm and make a huge scene." I cover my face with my hands. I should just go over there.
"Or you could call her and give her our address and let her come here, on your territory, so you have the upper hand,"
he suggests. "You're okay with that?" My hands move from my face.
"Of course. She's your mother, Tessa."
I look at him quizzically, given the rift between him and his dad. But when I see he's serious, I'm reminded that he's willing to work on things with his parents, so I should be that brave too. "I'll call her," I say. I look at the phone for a while before taking a deep breath and hitting her number. She's terse on the phone, speaking very quickly. I can tell she's saving all her hateful energy for when she sees me in person. I don't give her any details about the apartment or tell her that I live here. I only tell her the address where I am and get off the phone as fast as I can. Instinctively, I jump out of bed and begin to straighten up our place.
"The apartment is already clean. We have barely touched anything,"
Hardin says.
I know, I say, but it makes me feel better. After I fold and put away the few items of clothing that were on the floor, I light a candle in the living room and wait at the table with Hardin for my mother to show. I shouldn't be as nervous as I am. I'm an adult, and I make my own choices. But I know her and how badly she's going to lose it. I am already overly emotional from the brief glimpse into Hardin's past I was granted an hour ago, and I don't know if I have it in me to go to battle with her tonight. I look over at the clock and see it's already 8. Hopefully she won't stay long, and Hardin and I can get to bed early and just hold each other while we try to deal with our family legacies.
Do you want me to stay out here with you, or give you two some time to discuss everything?
Hardin asks after a bit. I think we should have a little time one-on-one, I say. As much as I want him by my side, I know that his presence will antagonize her. Wait, I just remembered something Noah said. He said the final bill for my dorm was paid. I look at him questioningly.
Yeah? So?
You paid it, didn't you? I half shout. Despite my energy, it's not really out of anger, just surprise and annoyance.
So?
He shrugs. Hardin, you've got to stop spending money on me. It makes me uncomfortable.
I don't see what the big deal is. It wasn't that much, he argues.
What are you, like, secretly rich or something? Are you selling drugs?
No, I just saved up a lot of money and don't really spend it. I lived entirely for free last year while I worked, so my paychecks just kept piling up. I never really had anything to spend money on. But now I do.
He smiles wide.
And I like spending it on you, so don't fight me over it.
You're lucky my mother is on her way, and I only have it in me to go to war with one of you, I tease, and he lets out a long chuckle that fades until we're just sitting, holding hands, and waiting. A few minutes later, there is a knock, well, a pounding at the door. Hardin stands.
I'll be right in the other room. I love you.
He gives me a swift kiss before exiting. I fill my lungs with the deepest breath I can manage and open the door. My mother looks eerily perfect, as always. Not a single smudge mars her heavily made-up eyes. Her red lipstick is smooth and silky. Her blonde hair is neatly piled almost in a halo around her head.
"What the hell do you think you're doing, moving out of that dorm without telling me?"
she shouts without introduction and pushes past me into the apartment. "You didn't give me much of a choice," I counter, then focus on breathing in and out to stay as calm as I can. She spins back to glare at me.
"Excuse me? How did I not give you a choice?"
"You threatened to not help me pay for my dorm," I remind her and cross my arms.
"So I gave you a choice, but you made the wrong one," she snaps.
"No, you're the one who's wrong here.
Listen to you. Look at you. You aren't the same Tessa that I dropped off at college 3 months ago."
She waves her arms to gesture up and down my body.
"You are defying me, even yelling at me. You have some nerve. I have done everything for you, and here you are, throwing it all away."
"I am not throwing anything away. I have an excellent internship that pays me very well. I have a car and a 4.0 grade point average. What more could you possibly want from me?" I shout back. Her eyes light up from the challenge, and her voice is full of venom as she says,
"Well, for starters, you could have at least changed your clothes before I came. Honestly, Tessa, you look like hell."
As I look down at my pajamas, she switches to a new criticism.
"And what is this? You wear makeup now? Who are you? You're not my Teresa, that is for certain. My Teresa wouldn't be hanging out in some devil worshipper's apartment in her pajamas on a Friday night."
"Do not speak about him that way," I say through my teeth. "I have already warned you." My mother squints her eyes and cackles. Her head falls back in laughter, and I fight the urge to smack her across her perfectly painted-on face. I immediately cringe at my violent thoughts, but she's pushing me too far. "And another thing," I say slowly, calmly, to make sure I deliver the pronouncement just so. "This isn't just his apartment. It is our apartment." And just like that, I get her to stop laughing. Chapter 92. This woman I've lived with values her sense of control so much that there are few times I've managed to surprise her, let alone stun her. But here, I have really, truly stunned my mother. Her posture is erect, and her face has fallen.
What did you just say?
She asks slowly. You heard me. This is our apartment, as in, we both live here. I put my hands on my hips for dramatic effect.
There is no way that you live here. You can't afford a place like this,
she scoffs. Would you like to see our lease? Because I have a copy.
This whole situation is even worse than I thought,
she says, then shifts her eyes to stare behind me as if I'm not even worth looking at while she calculates her formula for my life.
I knew you were being foolish by messing around with that boy, but you are just plain stupid for moving in with him. You don't even know him. You haven't met his parents. Aren't you embarrassed to be seen in public with him?
My anger boils over. I glance at the wall, trying to gather some composure, but it's too much, and before I can stop myself, I am in her face.
How dare you come into my home and insult him? I know him better than anyone, and he knows me better than you ever could.
And I have actually met his family, his father at least. You want to know who his father is?
He's the goddamn chancellor of WCU,
I scream. That should satisfy your sad little judgmental streak. I hate throwing Hardin's father's title around, but this is the type of thing that would jolt her. Probably because he heard the break in my voice, Hardin comes out of the bedroom with a worried expression. He comes over and stands beside me and tries to pull me back from my mother, just like last time.
Oh, great! And here's the man of the hour, my mother mocks and gestures wildly at him. His father is not the chancellor,
she half laughs. My face is red and soaked with tears, but I couldn't care less.
Yes, he is.
Shocked? If you weren't so busy being a judgmental bitch, you could have talked to him and found that out. You know what? You don't even deserve to know him. He has been there for me in ways you never were, and there is nothing, and I mean nothing, you can do to keep me away from him.
You do not speak to me that way, she screams and steps closer. You think just because you got yourself a fancy little apartment and put some eyeliner on that you are suddenly a woman? Honey, I hate to break it to you, but you look like a whore, living with someone at 18.
Hardin's eyes narrow at her in warning, but she ignores him.
You better end this before you lose your virtue, Tessa. Just take a look in the mirror, then look at him. You two look ridiculous together. You had Noah, who was great for you, and you threw him out for this.
She gestures to Hardin. Noah has nothing to do with this, I say. Hardin's jaw clenches, and I silently beg him not to say anything.
Noah loves you, and I know you love him. Now, stop this rebellious charade and come with me. I will get you back into your dorm, and Noah will certainly forgive you.
She reaches a hand out authoritatively, as if I'll take it and stroll out of here with her. I grab the bottom of my shirt with my fists.
You are so insane.
Honestly, Mother, listen to yourself. I don't want to come with you. I live here with Hardin, and I love him, not Noah. I care for Noah, but it was only your influence that made me think I loved him because I felt like I should. I am sorry, but I love Hardin, and he loves me.
Tessa, he doesn't love you. He is only going to stay around until he gets into your pants. Open your eyes, little girl.
Something about the way she just called me little girl sends me over the edge.
He has already gotten into my pants, and guess what? He's still around, I shout.
Hardin and my mother share the same shocked expression, but my mother's turns to disgust, while Hardin's turns to a sympathetic frown.
I'll tell you one thing, Teresa. When he breaks your heart and you have nowhere to go, you better not come to me.
Oh, trust me, I wouldn't. This is why you'll always be alone. You have no control over me anymore. I am an adult. Just because you couldn't control my father doesn't give you the right to try to control me. As soon as the words leave my mouth, I regret them. I know bringing my father into this is low, too low. Before I can apologize, I feel her hand connect with my cheek. The shock is more painful than the assault. Hardin steps between us and puts his hand on her shoulder. My face stings and I bite my lip to keep from crying harder.
If you don't get the fuck out of our apartment, I will call the police,
he warns her. The calm tone of his voice sends chills down my spine, and I notice my mother shiver, his tone clearly unnerving her, too.
You wouldn't. You just put your hands on her right in front of me, and you think I wouldn't call the police on you? If you weren't her mom, I would do much worse than that. Now you have 5 seconds to get out,
he says,
and I stare at my mother with wide eyes and bring my hand to my burning skin. I don't like the way he threatened her, but I want her to leave. After a challenging staring match between the two of them, Harden growls,
2 seconds.
She huffs and heads toward the door, the loud clamor of her heels echoing off the concrete floor.
I hope you're happy with your decision, Teresa, she says and slams the door.
Harden's arms wrap around me in the most comforting and reassuring embrace, and it's exactly what I need right now.
I'm so sorry, baby,
he says into my hair. I'm sorry that she said those terrible things about you. My need to defend him is stronger than any concern for myself or my mother.
Shh, don't worry about me. People say shit about me all the time,
he reminds me. That doesn't make it okay.
Tessa, please don't worry about me right now. What do you need? Can I do anything for you?
He asks. Maybe some ice? I choke.
Sure, baby.
He kisses my forehead and walks over to the fridge. I knew her coming here wouldn't end well, but I hadn't expected it to be as bad as it was. On one hand, I am beyond proud of myself for standing up to her, but at the same time, I feel terribly guilty for what I said about my father. I know it wasn't her fault that he left, and it's never been lost on me that she's been terribly lonely for the last 8 years. She has never even gone on a date since him. She's dedicated all of her time to me, grooming me into the woman she wanted me to be. She wants me to be just like her, and that just isn't going to work for me. I respect her and how hard she worked, but I need to carve my own path, and she has to see that she can't make up for her mistakes through me. I make too many of my own mistakes for that to work anyway. I wish she could be happy for me and see how much I love Harden. I know his appearance shocks her, but if she would just take the time to try to get to know him, I'm sure she would love him as much as I do. As long as he could contain his rudeness, which isn't likely, but I have noticed the small changes in him, like the way he holds my hand in public, and the way he leans down to kiss me nearly every time I pass him in the hallway of our apartment. Maybe I am the only person he will ever let inside, the only one who he reveals secrets to, and the only one he loves, but that's fine with me. To be honest, the selfish part of me kind of enjoys it. Harden pulls the chair out next to me and puts the makeshift ice pack against my cheek. The soft kitchen towel wrapped around it feels great against my sensitive skin. I can't believe she smacked me, I say slowly. The towel drops onto the tile floor and he reaches down to pick it up.
Me either. I thought I was going to lose it,
he says and looks into my eyes. I thought you were too, I admit, and give him a weak smile. I feel like today has been dragging on for too long. It has been the longest and most draining day of my life. I'm exhausted and I just want to be carried away, preferably into bed with Harden to forget about the downfall of my relationship with my mother.
I love you too much, or trust me, I would have.
He smiles back and kisses both of my closed eyelids. I choose to believe that he wouldn't actually do anything to her, that he is just speaking metaphorically. Somehow I know that even through all his rage, he wouldn't do something terrible, and that makes me love him more. I have come to learn that when it comes to me, Harden is more bark than bite. I really want to go to bed, I tell him, and he nods.
Of course.
I pull the blanket back before lying on my side of the bed. Do you think she will always be this way? I ask Harden. He shrugs, tossing a spare pillow onto the floor.
I would say no, that people change and mature, but I don't want to get your hopes up.
I lie down on my stomach, burying my face in my pillow.
Hey,
Harden says softly against my neck, trailing a finger down the curve of my back. I roll over, sighing as I take in the concern in his eyes. I'm fine, I lie. I need a distraction. I lift my hand to his face, brushing my thumb over the curve of his full lips. I tilt the metal ring to the side and he smiles.
Having fun staring at me like I'm some science experiment?
He teases. I nod, wiggling the metal between my fingers and using my other hand to touch the ring in his brow.
Good to know.
He rolls his eyes and takes my thumb between his teeth before I can pull away. I jerk back, hitting my hand against the headboard. I move to swat him the way I often do, and he grabs my sore hand between both of his and brings it to his mouth. I pout playfully until his tongue swirls around the tip of my index finger in the most provocative way.
He continues this across each fingertip until I'm a panting, needy mess. How does he do this? Such odd acts of affection from him affect me so intensely.
Feel good?
He asks, dropping my hand onto my lap. I nod again at a loss for words.
Want more?
He swipes his tongue across his lips, wetting them. I nod again.
Words, baby.
He insists. Yes, more please. My brain clearly doesn't work. I lean into him, needing his touch, needing him to continue the distraction. He shifts on the bed, tugging at the strings of my pajama pants with one hand and pushing his hair back from his forehead with the other. My panties are pulled down and left at my ankles as my pants hit the floor. He leans in, settling between my spread thighs.
Did you know that the clitoris on the female body was made strictly for pleasure? It has no purpose beyond that,
he informs me, pressing his thumb against the bud. I groan, pushing my head into the pillow.
It's true. I read it somewhere.
Playboy? I tease, struggling to form a thought, let alone words. He seems to find that amusing, and he smirks while lowering his head. The moment his tongue finds my sex, I grip at the sheets, and he works quickly, combining his fingers with his perfect mouth. I push my hands into his hair, silently thanking whoever it was who discovered this knowledge, as Harden brings me to orgasm, twice. Harden holds me tight all night long and whispers how much he loves me. As I start to drift off, I think about the day we just had. My relationship with my mother is damaged, possibly beyond repair, and Harden shared more information about his childhood with me. My dreams are clouded by a scared, curly-haired boy crying out for his mother. The next morning, I am pleased to see that my mother's assault has not left any visible marks. My chest still hurts from the collapse of our already crumbling relationship, but I refuse to dwell on that today. I take a shower and curl my hair, pinning it up so it isn't in my way as I apply my makeup and pull Harden's shirt from yesterday over my head. I put little kisses all over Harden's shoulders and ears to wake him up, and when my stomach grumbles, I pad into the kitchen to make us some breakfast. I want to start the day in the best way I can so we can both remain happy and calm before the wedding. By the time I finish my self-imposed kitchen therapy, I am pretty proud of the meal I have prepared. The counter is filled with bacon, eggs, toast, pancakes, and even hash browns. I made way too much food for the two of us, but Harden usually eats an enormous amount anyway, so there shouldn't be too much left. I feel strong arms wrap around my waist.
Whoa, what is all this?
He asks in a raspy, sleep-filled voice.
This is exactly why I wanted to live together,
he says into my neck. Why, so I can make you breakfast? I laugh.
No. Well, yes. That and waking up to seeing you half-dressed in the kitchen.
He nips at my neck. He attempts to lift up the hem of the t-shirt and squeeze the top of my thighs. I spin and wave a spatula in his face. Hands to yourself until after breakfast, Scott.
Yes, ma'am.
He chuckles and grabs a plate, piling it with food. After breakfast, I force Harden to take a shower despite his efforts to drag me back to the bed. His dark confession and the fight with my mother seem to be forgotten in the morning light. My breath is lost in my chest when Harden walks out of the bedroom in his outfit for the wedding. The black dress pants are snug but hang off his hips in the most delicious way, and his tie is hanging around his neck while his white button-down shirt is undone, revealing his gorgeous, toned torso.
I actually have no idea how to tie a tie.
He shrugs. My mouth is dry, and I can't stop staring at him, so I choke out, I can help you. Thankfully, Harden doesn't ask where I learned to tie a tie, since his mood would turn sour quickly at the mention of Noah. You look so handsome, I tell him when I finish. He shrugs and puts the black jacket on, completing the look. His cheeks flame, and I can't help but laugh at the unexpected emotion. I can tell he feels completely out of his element being dressed this way. And it's adorable.
Why aren't you dressed?
He asks. I was waiting until the last minute since my dress is all white, I tell him, and he mocks me playfully. Finally, after another check of my makeup and grabbing my shoes, I do put the dress on. It's even shorter than I remember, but Harden seems to approve. His eyes never leave my chest after catching sight of my strapless bra. He always makes me feel so beautiful and wanted.
As long as all the men there are my father's age, we shouldn't have a problem.
He smirks and zips me up. I roll my eyes and he kisses my bare shoulder before I unclip my hair, letting my long curls fall down my shoulders. The pale fabric of the dress is tight against my body, and I smile at the reflection of Hardin in me in the mirror.
You are absolutely stunning,
he tells me, kissing me again. We scramble around and make sure we have everything we need for the wedding, including the invitation and a congratulations card I bought. As I put my phone into a small clutch bag, Hardin grabs me by the waist.
Smile,
he says and pulls out his phone. I thought you didn't take pictures.
I told you I would take one, so let's take one.
His smile is goofy and youthful, and it makes my heart swell. I smile and lean into Hardin as he snaps our picture.
One more,
he instructs, and I stick my tongue out at the last moment. He captured it at the right moment, my tongue on his cheek and his eyes wide and full of humor. That's my favorite, I tell him.
There are only two.
Yeah, but still. I kiss him and he snaps another.
Accident,
he lies, and I hear him take another as I give him a look. Near his father's house, Hardin stops to get gas so we don't have to on the way home. As he is filling up, a familiar car pulls into the parking lot with Nate in the front seat. Zed parks his car two pumps over from Hardin's and gets out to go inside. I gasp when I get a good look at him. His lip is swollen, and both his eyes are black and blue. His cheek has a deep purple bruise, and when he notices Hardin's car, a furious scowl takes over his handsome, damaged face. What the hell? He doesn't say anything at all, or even acknowledge Hardin and me. Within seconds, Hardin climbs back into the car and takes my hand. I look down at our intertwined fingers and gasp, my eyes trailing over his busted knuckles. You, I say, and he raises his brow. You beat him up, didn't you? That's who you fought, and that's why he just ignored us.
Would you calm down?
Hardin barks and rolls up my window before pulling out of the lot. Hardin? I look over to where Zed has disappeared inside, then back at Hardin.
Can we please talk about it after the wedding? I'm already on edge. Please?
He begs, and I nod. Fine. After the wedding, I agree, and gently squeeze the hand of his that did so much damage to my friend. Chapter 93. Clearly trying to change the subject, Hardin asks,
So now that we have our own place, I assume you don't want to stay at my father's house tonight still?
I force Zed's beaten face to the back of my mind. You'd assume correctly, I smile. Unless Karen asks us to, you know I won't say no, I tell him. I am nervous to see Ken after what Hardin told me last night. I'm trying to clear it from my mind, but it's harder to accomplish than I thought.
Oh, I almost forgot,
he says and reaches for the radio. I look over at him and he holds his finger up to tell me to wait.
I decided to give the fray another try,
he informs me. Really? And when did you decide this? I question.
Well, after our first date at the stream, but I didn't open the CD until last week,
he admits. That was not a date, I tease, and he chuckles.
You let me finger you. I would say that's a date.
He grabs my hand as I try to swat him and kisses my palm. I giggle and wrap my fingers around his slender ones. Images of me lying on the wet T-shirt while Hardin gave me my first orgasm flood my thoughts, and Hardin smirks.
That was fun, huh?
He boasts, and I laugh. Anyway, tell me your evolved opinion on the fray, I request.
Well, they are not so bad, actually. There is one song that really sticks with me.
Now I am even more curious. Really?
Yeah,
he says, and his eyes flicker to the road before he presses the button on his radio. Music floods through the small space, and I immediately smile.
It's called Never Say Never,
Hardin says, as if it's new information to me and not already one of my favorites. We listen to the lyrics silently, and I can't fight the silly grin on my face. I know he is slightly embarrassed by playing this song for me, so I don't discuss it. I simply enjoy this tender moment with Hardin. The rest of the drive is filled with Hardin flipping through songs on the album, telling me what he thinks of each one. This small but meaningful gesture means more to me than he will ever know. I love these moments when he shows me a new side of himself. This side is one of my new favorites. When we arrive at his father's house, the street is full of cars.
Stepping out, I feel the crisp wind blow through me and I shiver. The thin jacket I wore over my dress doesn't offer me and my small dress much protection, really. Hardin shrugs out of his jacket and lays it over my shoulders. It's surprisingly warm and smells like him, my favorite scent.
"Well, look at you being such a gentleman. Who would have thought?" I tease.
"Don't make me take you back to the car and fuck you,"
he says, and I make a noise between a gasp and squeak, which he finds very amusing.
"Do you think you have room in that purse thing to hold my phone?"
he asks. It's a clutch, and yes. I smile and hold my hand out. He places the phone in my palm, and as I push it into the small purse, I notice his background is no longer plain gray. The small screen holds the picture of me that he snapped while I was talking to him in the room. My lips are slightly parted and my eyes are full of life. My cheeks have a warm glow. It's strange to see myself that way. This is what he does to me. He makes me come alive. "I love you," I tell him, and close the bag without putting him on the spot about his new background. Inside, Ken and Karen's large house is full of people, and Hardin grips my hand tightly after retrieving his jacket and putting it back on. "Let's try to find Landon," I suggest. Hardin gives me a nod and leads the way. We end up finding his stepbrother in the living room next to the china cabinet that replaced the one Hardin broke the first night I came here, which seems so long ago. Landon is surrounded by a group of men who all look to be at least 60, and one of them has his hand on Landon's shoulder. A smile appears on his face when he spots us, and he excuses himself from their conversation. He looks very handsome in a suit similar to Hardin's.
"Whoa, I never thought I'd live to see you in a suit and tie,"
Landon laughs.
"If you keep talking about it, you won't live much longer,"
Hardin threatens, but there's humor behind his words as he smiles. I can tell he is warming up to Landon, and that makes me happy. Landon is one of my closest friends, and I really care for him.
"My mother will be thrilled, and Tessa, you look beautiful,"
he says, and pulls me in for a hug. Hardin doesn't let go of my hand while I try to hug Landon back, so I do my best with one arm. "Who are all these people?" I ask. I know Ken and Karen have been here only a little over a year, so it's astounding that there are at least 200 people here.
"Most of them are Ken's friends from the university, and the rest are friends and family. I only know about half of them,"
he laughs.
"Would you guys like a drink? Everyone will be going outside in about 10 minutes. "Whose bright idea was it to have an outdoor wedding in December?"
Hardin complains.
"My mother's,"
Landon says.
"Besides, the tents are heated, obviously."
He looks around at the crowd, then back at Hardin.
"You should go let your father know that you're here. He's upstairs. My mother is hiding somewhere with my aunt." I think I'll just stay down here,"
Hardin replies. I caress his hand with my thumb. He gives me an appreciative squeeze, and Landon nods.
"Well, I have to go for now, but I will see you after,"
he says, and leaves us with a smile. "Do you want to go outside now?" I ask Hardin, and he nods. "I love you," I tell him. He smiles, full dimples.
"I love you, Tess,"
he says, and plants a kiss on my cheek. Hardin opens the back door and gives me his jacket once again. Stepping out, I see that the backyard has been wonderfully transformed. Two large tents take up most of the yard, and hanging from the trees and the patio are hundreds of small glowing lanterns. Even in the daylight, they are beautiful, and it's all quite a sight to behold.
"I think it's this one,"
Hardin says, and gestures to the smaller of the two tents. We squeeze through the part in the flaps, and indeed he is right. Rows of wooden chairs face a simple altar, with beautiful white flowers hung on some walls, and all the guests in black and white attire. About half the seats are full, so we take a seat in the second-to-last row because I know Hardin doesn't want to be up close.
"I never thought I would be attending my father's wedding,"
he says to me. "I know. I am incredibly proud of you for coming. It will mean so much to them. It maybe sounds like you think it will be good for you, too." I lean my head on his shoulder, and he snakes his arm around me. We begin to talk about the beautiful way this tent has been decorated in all black and white. Simple and elegant. Its simplicity makes me feel even more like I've been invited to an intimate, personal moment in his family, despite the large number of guests.
"I guess the reception is in the other tent,"
he says, and twirls a piece of my hair between his thumb and index finger. "I think so. I bet it's even more beautiful than..."
"Hardin?"
Is that you? A woman's voice says. We both turn our heads to the left. An elderly woman in a black and white floral dress and flat shoes stares at us with wide eyes. Oh, my heavens, it is you, she gasps. Her gray hair is swept back into a simple bun, and her minimal makeup makes her look healthy, radiant. For his part, all the color has drained from Hardin's face as he stands up and greets her.
Gammy.
She pulls him in for a tight hug. I can't believe you're here. I haven't seen you in years. Look at you, you handsome boy. Well, man now. I can't believe how tall you are. And what are these? She scowls and points at his facial piercings. He flushes and gives out an uncomfortable laugh.
How have you been?
He asks her and shifts back and forth on the balls of his feet. I am good, dear. I've missed you so much, she says, and pats the corners of her eyes. After a beat, she dramatically looks around him at me and asks with notable interest, And who is this lovely young woman?
Oh, sorry. This is Tess. Tessa, my girlfriend,
he answers.
Tessa, this is my gammy, my grandma.
I smile and stand up. The thought of meeting Hardin's grandparents had never crossed my mind. I had assumed they were dead like mine. He has never brought them up, but that isn't surprising. I suppose I haven't either. It's so nice to meet you, I say to her, and reach to shake her hand. But she has other plans, and pulls me in for a hug and kisses my cheek. The pleasure is all mine. What a beautiful girl you are, she says in an accent even thicker than Hardin's. My name is Adele, but you will call me Gammy. Thank you, I say, blushing. She claps her hands in glee. I just can't believe you're here. Have you seen your father recently? Does he know you are here? She asks, looking back at Hardin. Hardin bashfully